Welcome to our Bible study on Matthew chapter 14, verses 22 through 33, Jesus walking on the water and Peter making an attempt to do the same. As always, I am assuming that you have read the passage, that you have your Bible open and it's with you, and remember that our translations may not agree. As we start our study, some of you may remember the story of when Jesus was in the boat with the disciples and a storm came in. That's in Matthew chapter 8, verses 23 through 27. And Jesus was sleeping. But that's a different story. And we don't want to confuse them, or else we're going to end up with Jesus walking in his sleep. All right. So the story of Jesus walking on the water is joined to the feeding of the multitude, the feeding of the 5,000 in Matthew and also in Mark at chapter 6, verse 45 through 52, and the shortest account in John chapter 6, verses 16 through 21. And in all three accounts, this miracle is only for the disciples, which is a very unusual occurrence in the Gospels. Interestingly, the story is not told at all in the Gospel of Luke, and only Matthew talks about Peter's attempt to walk on the water. Typically, the interpretation of this story focuses on Peter, with the lesson being, if we keep our eyes on Jesus, we won't sink in the storm. It's not a bad lesson, but in our study today, I want to explore some other options. Some have suggested that Jesus walking on the water served as evidence of Jesus' cosmic power subduing the forces of nature. Seen in this way, the story is not about Jesus defying the laws of gravity. It's about Jesus showing how he overcomes the power of chaos and evil. In biblical literature, the sea is often represented as the abode of demonic forces hostile to God. In Revelation chapter 21, verse 1, the final reign of God means the sea will be no more. It will no longer exist. In our passage, at verses 25 through 27, Matthew's picture of Jesus standing on violent waves amid raging winds, saying to the fearful, "I am." Remember when Moses asked God's name? And that's the answer he gets? Certainly such an answer affirms the lordship of Jesus over the created world. By strolling across the stormy sea as if it were a paved street, Jesus proves he's beat down Satan under his feet, proving his dominion over the devils of the deep, as well as the wild winds and crashing waves up above. He is Lord of wind, sea, earth, and fire, whom the elements obey without a word being spoken. If we take that line even further, some have suggested that Matthew includes the Peter event to show that even Peter can become the agent and voice of Satan, which is what we see in chapter 16, verse 23, when Jesus says, "Get behind me, Satan," to Peter. According to this interpretation, Peter's response, "If it is you," is similar to Satan's first words to Jesus in the temptation, in chapter 4, verse 3. Peter is seeking some experiential, spectacular reassurance that Jesus is who Jesus says he is. Peter knows that Jesus was left behind on the beach, just like some people think Jesus was left back in history. But in both cases, it is clearly impossible for Jesus to come to us. So when Jesus appears walking on the sea, it should be good news, if it is true. This interpretation challenges the conventional interpretation that if Peter had had enough faith, he could have walked on the water. And for today's Christians, if they had enough faith, they could overcome all their problems in spectacular ways. Their point is that such an interpretation identifies faith with spectacular exceptions to our ordinary days, which in turn can make people feel guilty for their lack of faith. Another way to see this story is to see it like an epiphany, an appearance of Jesus similar to the resurrection appearance. On a dark night of fear and helplessness, Jesus comes to his disciples. Until reassured, they think they see a ghost. Special attention to Peter recalls resurrection stories, such as in Luke chapter 24, verse 34, when the Emmaus visitors report that they had just seen Jesus and are told that Jesus had also appeared to Peter. And in the Gospel of John, chapter 21, when Peter is on the boat with some of the other disciples and recognizes Jesus on the shore and jumps into the water. Although jumping in the water is not the same as walking on the water, because all of us can jump into the water. Ha ha. All right. So in addition to Matthew adding Peter's attempt to walk on the water, Matthew also changes the end of the story from Mark's version. If you look at Mark chapter 6, verses 51 and 52, Jesus gets into the boat and the wind ceased, just like in our passage at Matthew chapter 15, 32. But in Mark chapter, 14:32. But in Mark chapter 6:51, we are told that the disciples are utterly astounded. And verse 52, for they did not understand about the loaves, but their hearts were hardened. Huh? What the heck is Mark thinking? What does that have to do with Jesus walking on the water? No wonder Matthew changes the ending. In Matthew's version, it ends with the disciples worshiping Jesus, saying he is the Son of God. That's a much better ending. We'll look at it more closely a little bit later. In John's version, at chapter 6, verse 21, the disciples are glad to take Jesus into the boat, and immediately the boat was at the land to where they were going, which is kind of like a fast forward, I guess. In Matthew's version, our passage is set between a crowd scene at chapter 14, 12 through 21, the feeding of the 5,000 that we studied last week, and a crowd scene in chapter 14, verse 34 through 36, where Jesus heals people. Because this miracle is only for the disciples, some people have suggested that this is a story to and for the church. Some commentators lift up the symbolism of the boat as a metaphor for the church. In Matthew's account, the boat is being tortured by the waves. This description is as strange as the Greek word seismos, that can mean earthquake, translated sudden storm in English on the sea, back in Matthew chapter 8, verse 24. It's seismos there, an earthquake, a sudden storm. But the same Greek word that is used to describe the earthquake in chapter 8, verse 24, is also used in chapter 28, verse 2, at the resurrection. See how that works? The symbolism of the boat and the church is strengthened by remembering that we sit in the nave of the sanctuary, if we ever get to come back to church, a word whose origins come from the Latin navis, which means boat or ship. Others point out that many churches, including our own, are kind of designed as an upside-down boat. As we look at that A-frame, we could imagine if it was flipped the other way, it could maybe sail. The church in the world is like this church in a storm. The disciples are in a boat without Jesus, A threatening storm arises. Jesus comes, bringing first fear and then reassurance. Peter, representing the disciples, now feels strong enough to handle the storm as Jesus did, and almost succeeds. Jesus rescues Peter, i.e. the disciples, i.e. the church, from the storm. The winds cease, and the disciples now worship Jesus as Son of God. Another way to see the story of Peter's attempt to walk on water is to see where this story is placed. In verses 26 through 27, the disciples are fearful, and in verse 33, they are worshiping. Seen in this way, the story is in three phases. Ah, wait, I don't want to think about phases, this stupid COVID thing. Let's say the story can be seen in three acts. Act 1, verse 27, Jesus announces, "It is I." Act 2, verse 28, Peter says, "If it is you." And in Act 3, verse 33, the entire group says, "Truly you are." See, that altered ending allows Matthew to join this story to Matthew's portrayal of the disciples after the resurrection in chapter 28, verses 16 through 18, in which the disciples respond to Jesus' lordship with fear, doubt, and worship. In the Gospel of Mark, Mark's insistent that the disciples never understood, like we see in Mark 6:52 and elsewhere, is modified by Matthew to a portrait of poor persons of little faith, a phrase that we see used in Matthew at chapter 8, verse 26, here in chapter 14, verse 31, also in chapter 16, verse 8, and also in chapter 17, verse 20. For Matthew, Jesus' followers have faith, but not enough. And so Jesus nourishes that little faith to the point of confession and praise. If we look at the verses, we can see verse 22. Why did Jesus make the disciples get in the boat? Matthew uses a very strong word, meaning compelled or insisted. In other words, it was not a suggestion. This helps to set up for the end of verse 23, in which Matthew again rewrites Mark's version by emphasizing the separation between Jesus and the disciples. Jesus was alone by himself. Matthew has replaced Mark's word, Greek word monos, by adding the Greek word katidion. Why does Jesus dismiss the crowds by himself? Why do they even need dismissed? But in the Gospel of John, the crowds want to make him king because it's after the miracle of the bread, and they want to say, "We have a real breadwinner here." Okay, no more humor. Maybe Jesus was trying to spare the disciples that temptation, but I doubt it. Matthew is simply trying to set up the fact that Jesus and the disciples are apart. As we look at verse 23, this is the first time in the Gospel of Matthew that Matthew reports Jesus going up to the hills by himself to pray. It happens a lot in Luke, but remember, this story is not in Luke. In verse 24, we see that the boat is buffeted or battered, but the Greek word is basanazio, and means being tortured by the waves, which is different than Mark's version, where the disciples are laboring at rowing. This adds to the earlier idea of the boat representing the church and is reminiscent of the earlier storm at sea scene that I referred to in chapter 8, verse 24, because that scene used the word that actually meant earthquake. So in both cases, Matthew allows his symbolism to shape his description of the suffering the church is experiencing during its mission. At verse 25, some of your translations may say the fourth watch, while others will say 3 o'clock in the morning. The fourth watch implies the Roman division of the night, as in Mark chapter 13, verse 35, and that would have been between 3 and 6 a.m. See, the Jews reckon the night as only having 3 watches. When we get to verse 28, Lord, if it is you, bid me to come to you on the water. That's a strange request. I think I would say something like, make the storm stop, or what the heck are you doing, or how are you doing that? And then we get to verse 31. Why did you doubt? And the Greek word used here for doubt is distazo, which connotes vacillation, not skepticism. And the only other time that particular word for doubt is used in the entire New Testament is in Matthew 28, verse 17. Yeah, at the very end, when the disciples meet the risen Lord on the mountain and worship, but some doubted. Which, by the way, is also the only other occurrence of the disciples worshiping Jesus. Remember, as we look at this story, this miracle only happened for the disciples, which may symbolize us and the church, reminding us that Jesus does come to us, even in times of storm and doubt. Thank you for listening. Take care and God bless.